Dynamic material in banking that I have ever come across in the 14 years that I've been lecturing. For the past 14 years, I have tried my best to tell the truth. Ever since I wrote my first book, The Energy Non-Crisis, which most of you know the past history of that, and I said I must tell the American people the facts. And for the past 14 years, I've lectured literally across America and around the world. Many things come across my desk. And I take them with a grain of salt, and I hear so much until not much bothers me. Every now and then, a particular item will come to my attention that does startle me. And the material that I'm giving in the beginning of my lecture this afternoon, I consider to be an 11th-hour message of some of the most catastrophic events that I believe will probably take place in your lifetime and mine, and could have their beginning in the very near future. I have in my hand an item that I could hardly believe what I was reading. It's a publication that is very much recognized. It's put out by VeriBank. VeriBank is a bank examining institution. It's probably the most recognized in America today as to the condition of banks. When I was given this, the gentleman that gave it to me said, "You need to read just inside the legislative update of what is scheduled for the banking system in the United States of America on December the 19th of 1992. Now, this is so new, until those of you who wish to purchase the videotape of this lecture I'm giving this afternoon, which was only videoed a few weeks ago, this particular item is so new until it's not even on the tape. I just received it a few days ago, and I believe that it's going to be the December surprise. Mark my words. May not be, but here's what it is. The new FDIC bailout law, December the 19th, 1991, the Congress of the United States of America passed the FDIC Improvement Act. That act was to be enforced by law as of December the 19th, 1992. It sets a minimum level of capital for the bank. If the bank's tangible equity falls below 2%, closure proceedings must begin by the FDIC immediately by law. The law was passed on December the 19th, 1991. I know I shouldn't repeat as a public speaker, but I want to make sure that you get the dates. And it is to take effect as of December the 19th, 1992, and it should be the key issue by both of our presidential candidates, and not one of them have mentioned one time the banks in America that by law must be closed on that date. I'll continue in the article. While this condition does not become effective until December the 19th, 1992, some 424 banks have problem loans sufficient to wipe out loss reserves and reduce equity below the trigger level of 2%. Would you like to know how much? Calculate it. Write in the records of how much money is not in the banks that would have to be guaranteed by the FDIC. You do know, of course, who the FDIC is. You walk into a bank, you see a little sign that says deposits guaranteed by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and this is what backs up the funds that you have in the bank. Now, the FDIC, as of December the 19th, 1992, must have the following amount of money in order to bail out banks, and this has already been calculated now by very reputable sources, a total of $598 billion in assets is affected, but yet the FDIC today has only $70 billion in its war chest to back up $598 billion of banks that don't have the money in them. What does that mean is going to happen as of December the 19th, 1992, by law passed by Congress? Would you like to know the name of the banks that must be closed as of December the 19th? This column is startling. I could hardly believe what I was reading. And on the right-hand side of the column, it even lists the amount of assets that the banks will be short, calculated as of December the 19th. And some of them are in the minus figure. That means that the banks do not have one penny in their safe to back up your money. All they're required to have is 2%. You know what 2% of $100 is? You know what 2% of $1 is? 2 cents. You mean they don't even have 2 cents of your money in tangible assets in the bank, and that's all they're required? And if they fall under 2%, they're required to be closed. Listen to this one. Citibank, the second largest banking institution in the United States of America, only has 0.31%. I did not say 1% or 2%. According to the actual statistics, on December the 19th, they will have 0.31%. That means less than one penny of every dollar you deposit. You know the second one on the list that's in jeopardy? That's right. It's the first largest bank in the United States of America. It's Bank of America, and they only have 1.91 cents for every $1. And by law, passed by Congress of the United States of America, December the 19th of last year, those banks, along with this entire list, which will startle you, must be closed, pronounced bankrupt, by law, as of December the 19th, 1992. Startling? Startling? Oh, it only lists a certain amount. There are many more than one more. There are 400 and something banks. They must close by law. Well, you know who Mr. Tom Foley is? Thomas Foley, Speaker of the House in Washington, D.C. You know that Mr. Thomas Foley has used the word be for the word default. I'd like to read you an article by Kathleen Day. She says, goes on to say, let us just admit the reality that the national debt will never be repaid or can be repaid by even inflated dollars. Listen now. Listen carefully because this is startling. She says, if it's good enough for Brazil and Mexico, why not us? After all, doesn't the world owe America one debt forgiveness? You know what happened in Brazil? I'd like to read you a blow-by-blow, minute-by-minute account of what happened in Brazil. Here it is, on the front page of a major newspaper. It happened a year and a half ago. This paper is July 1990. She is suggesting, and Tom Foley, the Speaker of the House, has in the past suggested a default on the part of the United States of America. Brazil officially did default a year and a half ago. Listen carefully to what the Speaker of the House and the writer of this major article in none other than the Arizona Republic on July the 5th, 1992 is suggesting that America default. Listen what will happen to you, your bank account, and the finances of America when we do default, which must take place at some point. One of the biggest news stories in Brazil is being kept quiet in the United States of America. Why? During the last week of March, wealthy Brazilians were shocked and panic-stricken as banks closed and the state seized all savings. President Carlos of Brazil ordered more taxes, another new currency, all this in the first day of his office. He was elected the president of Brazil. And the next day after his election, he announced that Brazil was going to default, and listen what happened. Fuel prices have jumped 56%. Postal rates went up 80%. Telephone rates went up 32%. Electricity went up 32%. And airfares have gone up 50%. The government announced that the expiration of the money in bank accounts will be 18 months, at which time it will be returned in 12-month payments. They said nobody will get one penny out of the banks for 18 months, and after that, we will dole your money out over the past 12 months, maybe. This actually happened in Brazil. Did you hear about it in America? Why not? Did they not want you to know it? Since the Speaker of the House has suggested it, listen again, suicides have been reported by the once wealthy. There are stories of people driving their cars through plate glass windows of banks. Tennis shoes have been traded for sugar. Toothpaste have been traded for car tires. Two men exchange a car for an apartment. Retail business sales are down 50%. Most consumers are without cash. Banks are unable to honor checks. Is that what we want in America? It's being suggested. Listen again. Pawn shops are doing a roaring trade on wedding rings. Sad. Well, one more and I'll quit. We wonder why the story hasn't hit the nightly news. Why? Because it's being suggested to happen in the United States of America. Well, this one you'll recognize, October 1992, Dollar Falls. Now, this came out of the Los Angeles Times newspaper. Dollar Falls and its fallout. And it goes on to tell what is happening to the America dollar, American dollar. The dollar has fallen drastically around the world. Try to go abroad now and see if you have enough money to buy anything over there. And it goes on to tell the most horrifying story you can imagine of what is happening because foreigners have lost faith in American dollars, aren't buying our T-bills anymore. For lack of time, I won't even read that in depth. This came out of the Arizona Republic as I was taking the airplane here the other day. As we went through an airport, I picked up this from the newsstand. This is September the 17th, 1992. This is right in our back door, and the headlines on the Arizona Republic is Europe in financial crisis, and it goes on to tell how that for the first time in the history of the British Commonwealth, Great Britain devalued its currency on September the 16th. Did you know that? First time in the history of Great Britain. What's happening? Is your money safe in your bank? Is your money safe in Social Security? Is your money safe in a pension fund? Dark night, gopher hole, the backyard, and some gold. That's about the only place. Well, did you know that as of December the 31st, 1992, that there is going to be a European Economic Community mark? Those who were in my meeting on Friday, do you remember the mark that they're suggesting that human beings take, which of course the Bible said a long time ago that there'd be a mark of the beast at some point. But did you know that the European Economic Community, which is supposed to begin in full force with the European currency, European banking, that all of this is supposed to have its beginning on January the 1st of 1993. Surely you know what's happening in Europe. All of the European countries are saying we will let down our borders, we'll have free trade, there'll be no more need for passports, you can travel freely from one nation to the other, we'll have a common currency. And all of this is supposed to begin taking effect in a major way as of January the 1st, 1993. But the thing that most American companies and our government is withholding from you and me is the fact that as of December the 31st, 1992, any American business firm who wishes to sell products in Europe must have a EEC, European Economic Community, mark on the product. Did you know that? You know, not a single product from the United States of America can be sold in Europe as of December the 31st without the mark. Let me read it to you right out of this newspaper again. One cannot market or sell a product unless it has the EC mark. The EC mark has to be affixed to the regulated product in order to circulate it throughout the EC, European Community. One cannot market or sell a product unless it has the EC mark. Getting the mark is the major concern of American businesses. Now, you think American businesses are in trouble now. Just wait until they can't sell on the European market any longer. How many businesses are going to go broke? Why hasn't a presidential candidate said anything about this? Why is it that they're not making it a major point in the election? Because neither one of them will dare to touch it. I see some hands trying to go up. Please hold your questions. We may have a few moments for question and answer at the end if I don't give out of time. Why isn't this a major issue in the election? It should be. Well, what is the design plan? George Bush made it very plain just recently. You may have heard his address to the nation. I'd like to read you just a portion of it. This is a historic moment, by the way. This was January the 16th, 1991. President George Bush made this as his statement to the nation, nationwide over national television and radio. He said, "This is a historic moment. We have in past years made great progress in ending the long era of the Cold War. We have before us an opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we will have a real chance at a new world order, an order in which the credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promises and vision of the UN founders. What is President Bush trying to tell us? Well, for the next few moments' time, I would like to give you the state of the economy. I was not asked to give the State of the Union message. I wish I had been. I would have been more than happy to do it. But since I was not, for the next few moments, I would like to give you the state of the economy. Are you ready? Are you ready? Maybe you aren't. I'm not quite sure. I'm watching my audience this afternoon to see some people. I'm seeing almost horror on your faces. You know, I see this amongst those that I love the most, the senior citizens, the young people who just think that they're going to see the great American dream. The state of the economy, what is it? January through March, Northwest Orient Airlines lost $44.6 million. Just a drop in the bucket, isn't it? Macy's Department Store has been in business for over 100 years successfully and made money up until January the 1st. But from January the 1st through March, Macy's lost $57.4 million. Individual bankruptcies in the state of Arizona alone for 1992 were 1,800. For 1991, projected for 1992, 21,600 bankruptcies of individuals. New house starts in April 1992 were down 41%. What is the U.S. debt? Here are the statistics. The U.S. government is going into debt at the rate of $200 million per minute. $7 per day for every man, woman, and child in the United States of America. 20 states are running deficits. California is $41.3 billion behind in their payment of their debt. New York, $6.5 billion. Connecticut, $2.5 billion. Pennsylvania, $2.5 billion. And Texas, $2.2 billion behind in their debt ratio with what's coming in the budget. How long can they go on this way? Do you think a state can declare bankruptcy? Sure it can. Can a city declare bankruptcy? You better believe it. They did in 1929. I know. My daddy was a wealthy man one day. The next day he was a pauper. All of his money was in Coral Gables Corporation, the city of Coral Gables, Florida. He had thousands and thousands of dollars in city bonds and securities. And what did Coral Gables do? Declared bankruptcy. One day he was rich. The next day he was a pauper. You think a T-bill is safe? Can America declare bankruptcy? Did Brazil? What happened in Mexico when they devalued the peso 3 years ago? You think it can't happen in America? Just wait till the people who hold the national debt decide to foreclose and find out if it can. The FDIC had $18.3 billion in surplus in 1987. Today it is virtually broke. One out of every 10 Americans are receiving food stamps. Please ask your senator about this one. This one's going to starve you. On Thursday, February the 6th, 1992, for the first time in the history of the United States of America, the U.S. Senate began its daily sessions with Muslim prayers to Allah. Muslim prayers to Allah. Could that possibly be the reason that we're in trouble today? In God we trust. What God? Well, the God of Muhammad. Congressman must think Muhammad. Well, do you have a pension plan? Would you like to know the condition of it? Maybe I shouldn't read this. Well, someone says go ahead anyway, all right? The Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation recently reported that 50 large U.S. companies have pension funds which are severely underfunded by $21.5 billion. The companies with the most severely underfunded pension funds are General Motors, Chrysler Corporation, LTV, the biggest industries in America, and 97,000 pension funds are in jeopardy. You have a pension fund you're depending on retiring with? Well, how about this one? You're a member of a church? Any kind at all? Did you know that your church is required to report to IRS on you this year? Oh, yes, by mandate of the federal government, because on February the 15th of 1992, the Bush administration proposed to make churches, synagogues, and temples report to the IRS the names of all donors who give more than $500 per year. I wonder why. What do they want to psychoanalyze about you? Well, you do realize, of course, that the Japanese stock market is about gone. Oh, yes. Listen to this one. On March the 31st, the Japanese stock market went to a five-year low. The Japanese stock market has shown losses. Now, if you have a pencil and paper, write this one down. This will startle you. These are actual statistics put out by one of our government agencies. The Japanese stock market has shown losses from January the 1st through April the 21st. I don't know why they chose those dates. But from January the 1st through April the 21st of this year, the Japanese stock market posted losses in the amount of 2.6 trillion. You did hear correctly. I did not say million. $2.6 trillion. And today, in Hawaii, you'll see a number of hotels that are halfway up, not on Kauai either, where they got knocked down. On other islands, halfway up, construction stopped. The Japanese could not afford to continue. They backed out and left them where they are. They said, we can't put any more money in. Why? Japanese easy money is all over. You know what foreigners purchase in America? Over 30% of our T-bills, which justifies our national debt, is purchased by foreigners. And when foreigners can no more afford to buy those T-bills, what's going to happen to the American Treasury note and the American dollar? By the way, what time does your bank open on Monday morning? Well, you think the Soviet Union is really dismantled? You know, the thing that's so startling to me about the Soviet Union is they say that Soviet Union is no more. Now we've got this wonderful nation over there, these wonderful people that are just, everything is perfectly fine. We don't have to worry about them at all. Do you realize that the Soviet Union, every single agreement that they've ever signed with any nation on the face of the earth, that those agreements were disannulled whenever the Soviet Union said we have dissolved? Huh? None. I mean, none of the agreements of past years, because the Soviet Union, as it was, and not only that, but the Soviet Union doesn't even have a constitution yet. Would we give billions of dollars to any nation on the face of the earth that had not even written the constitution since it changed the governments? I wonder what would have happened in South Florida if President Bush had given $30 billion to recoup those people who lost it in a natural disaster. But what did he send in? Troops. So now the breakup of the Soviet Union has taken place, has it? No, quite to the contrary. Because on March the 30th of this year, 14 of the former Russian republics signed an agreement to join together again, and for all practical purposes, the Soviet Union is as strong as ever. And someone who just came back from there 2 weeks ago said to me only this past week, he said the KGB is as active and alive and well as it ever was under the old Soviet Republic. Why? Listen to Don McElvaney, and by the way, please get his tape, his videotape, entitled Mesmerized by the Bear. You'll sit on the edge of your chair in your house and watch it for three solid hours, and it will startle you. Is all of this done, or is it by design plan? It's my condition, my contention, that what's happening in the world today is not by chance. It's by design, and at this point, for those who may be hearing me for the first time, I must tell you where I'm coming from, because you stand here and look at me and you say, Lindsey Williams, who are you to try to put all this together? You're not even Bo Bright running for president. What authority do you have? Well, let me tell you in a moment, and Bo is my hero, by the way. You love him, don't you? Marvelous man. I'd like to tell you where I'm coming from and why I can say these things with authority, because you see, in 1971, I was a missionary in the state of Alaska. 1973, I heard them say that they were going to build the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline, that 800-mile pipe transversing the state of Alaska from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez. 15% of our crude oil today is flowing down it. And I went to the oil companies after I had heard that there were going to be 25,000 pipeliners to converge on the state of Alaska to build that pipeline. And I had heard that pipeliners were supposed to be about the most wicked, cussing, drinking folks on the face of the earth. And believe you me, that was the understatement of the year. And I said to the oil companies, don't you need a chaplain on that pipeline? And they said, well, we don't have anything to pay you. I said, well, if you don't have anything to pay me, you can't tell me what to preach. When do I go to work? And in June of 1974, they allowed me to be the chaplain on the seven northern camps from Galbraith Lake to Prudhoe Bay on the pipeline. About 6 months later, they came to me and said, "You're saving us thousands of dollars of counseling fees we aren't having to pay for. We'd like to make life a little easier up here for you, and we voted to give you executive status." I didn't have the slightest idea of what that meant, but I soon was to find out that I was being invited to sit in on the board meetings with some of the wealthiest, most prestigious, influential people on the face of this earth. And for the next 3 years, I sat and listened to these men talk. I was there in an advisory capacity in order to help the relationship between management and labor. And what I heard in those 3 years, as I heard some of the richest, most prestigious men on the face of this earth, it changed my life. I will never again be the same man. If someone had asked me in 1973, "Lindsey Williams, do you believe that there is a plot or a conspiracy to control the world?" I would have laughed at you and said, "Who are you, a John Bircher?" If someone had asked me in 1977, "Lindsey Williams, do you believe that there's a group of people on the face of this earth who wish to control the world?" I would have said, "Not only do I believe it, I sat and listened to them talk about it." I heard them talk about manipulating nations. And I thought to myself, as a Bible-believing, God-fearing individual who knows Christ as my Savior, I said, "Wait a minute. Nobody in this world can be that diabolically wicked as to intentionally manipulate nations." I heard one oil company group say one day what they had done to the Arabs over the past few years, what they were doing to the Arabs, what they were going to do to the Arabs over the next few years. And I remember the day that I stood in California as I was on tour from northern to southern California over about a month period, and I'd just been called by Mr. Ken Fromm, who, by the way, is the Mr. X of my book, The Energy Non-Crisis. I can give his name now because he's already retired from Atlantic Richfield. And he called me up one day and he said, "Lindsey," by the way, he was the man who produced the entire North Slope of Alaska for Atlantic Richfield, the oil companies. And he said, "Lindsey, oil prices are going to go from $32 a barrel to $12 to $15 a barrel within the next 30 days. And I said, "Ken, it can't happen. It will affect the entire world's economy." He said, "Lindsey, it's going to." They predicted it in advance. I thought OPEC controlled oil prices. Not on your life. OPEC doesn't have a thing to do with oil prices. The people who sit behind the computers and purchase the tankers of oil in New York and London every morning tell the Arabs what they're going to give them for their oil. And they knew where oil prices were going. And as I traveled through California, I stood before audiences back in 1974 and 75, and I said, "Oil prices are going from $32 a barrel to $12 to $15 a barrel." And at times, my audiences literally burst out laughing at me. I literally had one audience that started laughing. You know what happened a month later when it happened? My phone almost rang off the hook. They said, "How did you know it? You're a prophet." I said, "A prophet? Nothing. I was sitting in the board meetings and listening to them talk about it." I had one of their own men call me and tell me because he thought that I ought to tell everybody I could before it happened. And it did. It literally affected the world's economy. And now where are the Arabs? For the first time last year, Saudi Arabia borrowed money from the World Bank. And back 5-7 years ago, they were one of the richest nations on the face of the earth, and their sheikhs and sheikhs flying around in their own private 747 airplanes. And today they're almost broke. Why? Because by design plan, they took the price of oil through the roof. By design plan, they took the price of the oil through the floor. Why? The name, the game, is control. Please, write it all the way across the top of your notes, and never forget it as long as you live. Why do they do this? One reason, and one reason only. As the oil company official said to me one day when I was sitting in a board meeting with a number of them, and I heard them describe where the next gasoline shortage was going to be 6 months from then, and yet there were long lines at the gas pump, and you were waiting for fuel. And I said, "Wait a minute, gentlemen. I know you've got the oil. I've heard about it. And now you're telling me that 6 months from now, this particular area of America will have long lines at the gas pump?" You remember, the whole country never had shortage at the same time. Sectionalized, piece by piece. And I said, "You know where it's going to be. You can do something about it. Why don't you?" And this top oil company official looked back at me with kind of a grin on his face, and he said, "Chaplain, it's been planned for a long time. You were just players on that chessboard to manipulate any way that they desired to manipulate you. Please get this book. It is must reading for every person who cares about our land." After I wrote my first book, Energy Non-Crisis, I remembered back what I heard as I sat in those board meetings. As I rubbed shoulders with these men, I remembered their mental attitude, their mindset. The average person cannot understand how these super wealthy people think. They're the most diabolically wicked people. You and I think in terms of helping our fellow man, don't we? How can we make this world a better place to live? These people think only in terms of manipulation, control, greed, gain. And I said, I must tell the American people how they think. I heard them. I rubbed shoulders with them. I lived with them day after day on the pipeline. And I wrote my book, Syndrome of Control, solely for the purpose of trying to help you understand how the superpower rich of the world think and how they manipulate you and manipulate me by a design plan, and how that nothing in the politics ever happens by chance. It happens by design. So what have they done in order to do all of this? I'd like to list three things that they had to do in order to enslave America. They're just about ready. Now, before I go into this, I gave a number of things in the beginning of my lecture today that I have only received within the past week to 2 weeks. So before I go on, I'd like to give a warning. I believe that there is a very good possibility of a post-election surprise. Do you remember what Mr. Bush did when he was elected his first term? He was elected 1 week, had never said one word about the savings and loan institutions being in trouble, and the week after his election, he announced, what? Savings and loan bailout necessary. Why have no presidential candidate said one thing about the banks that are going to require more to bail out than the savings and loans? Why? They don't dare talk about it until they get elected. They know it. They know December the 19th as well as my name is Lindsey Williams. They know exactly what's going to happen. I believe the same thing could happen in America that happened in Brazil. And if it doesn't happen, it'll only be because they circumvent the law, because the law requires them to close those institutions. What did they do in order to bring America to the place that it is today? First of all, they had to change our form of government. Please write it down. Of course, you'll get it on the videotape if you buy it, or on the audio tape. We have an American flag here. I'd like to pledge allegiance to the first part of that flag by myself. And as I do, would you correct me if I say anything wrong? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the democracy. Oh, but you ask the average politician what it is. What does he say? A democracy or a republic? Why does he say democracy? Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution of the United States of America says, some of you constitutionalists, I'm sure you can quote it, Congress shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. Read it. You'll find an entire copy of the Constitution of the United States of America in my book, To Seduce a Nation. And this is a constitutional study from a Christian standpoint. Read it in Article 4, Section 4. But why does they say a democracy? Because that's what they've changed this to. Let me go back to that pledge of allegiance to the flag. And whenever I stop, please give me the next word. One nation under who? God. Now, help me out for the next few moments, if you will. One nation under God. Then God created man. Then man wrote the Constitution. And the Constitution formed government. You ready? Help me once. One nation under God. God created man. Man wrote the Constitution. The Constitution formed his government over man. Here's the Constitution over God. But they came in one day and said, no more of that God stuff. Don't you dare pray in the classroom. The only place you can have God is on the back of your currency, along with the seeing eye. Don't you dare mention him anyplace else in public. So they took him down, shuffled him away as if they were afraid of him. Then they took man down from his place and put him under the Constitution. Then they took the Constitution out of its place and put it under the black-robed dictators of the Supreme Court to interpret it as if we simple people don't have sense enough to read a document like that for ourselves. And when they had finished the rearrangement, they had formed a democracy run by a bureaucracy, which makes us nothing but sheeple. I have a message for Washington, D.C. I am proudly we the people. Well, had to take a lot of things and change around at that point. Executive orders. On and on we could go. I had before me, which I don't have time to give this afternoon, a document showing an outright lie by the Department of Interior, saying that there's no oil on the North Slope of Alaska except the Prudhoe Bay oil field. And the man who signed this, who was Assistant Secretary of Energy and Minerals, intentionally lied to Mr. Bud Falk, who wrote the letter and asked, and he knew all the time he was lying. What should happen if you would write to your congressman and you'd say, Mr. Congressman, in Lindsay Williams' book, there's a chapter entitled Gull Island Will Blow Your Mind, and that chapter describes the largest oil pool that has ever been discovered on the face of this earth. Now, is that true or false? By the way, that Gull Island field, I was there the day that it was discovered. I was there the day that the oil was tested, that the oil was released from the ground, that the chemical analysis of the oil was made, and within 24 hours' time, it was ordered classified, all of the information, and I dared later to print it. It's a miracle story how it happened. You see, Mr. Ken Fromm, the senior executive of Atlantic Richfield that I mentioned just a moment ago to you, allow me to diverge just a minute. I got to tell you the story. I can see that you're interested in it. Mr. Ken Fromm was that senior executive with Atlantic Richfield, an honest man, one of the few I ever met, that developed the entire east side of the Prudhoe Bay oil field for Atlantic Richfield. And Ken Fromm, after I wrote my book, Atlantic Richfield fired him. He called me up on the phone one day, and he said, Lindsay, I've been a company man all of my life. I'm only 2 years, 3 years from retirement. And he said, because they thought I gave you that information, Atlantic Richfield fired me. Take credit for something like that. And he said, not only that, Lindsay, but he said, I am so mad at what Atlantic Richfield did to me. He said, in your original book, which, by the way, this is not the original of our book. This is an updated and enlarged edition. And he said, in your original book, you've got a few mistakes. But he said, I didn't want to say anything about it because I was still with the company. But he said, I am so mad that the company fired me. He said, I'd like to rewrite your book for you. And he rewrote Energy Non-Crisis meticulously perfect and gave me all the data on the Gull Island field that was classified information, and I dared to print it. And the government almost went into hysteria, and my life was threatened. And for a number of months, there was a go-between between the executive board of Atlantic Richfield and myself, and they called me periodically and threatened me. Now, if your congressman should write, or you should write to your congressman and say, in Lindsay Williams' book, Energy Non-Crisis, is that true about Gull Island? What would your congressman do? Will he go to Alaska and investigate? No, he doesn't have time. He's too busy with his parties in Washington. Would he go to the National Archives and look up the issues? No. What would your congressman do? He would contact the Department of Energy, who is a bureaucratic institution, not elected by the people of the United States of America, a part of the democracy, which we were never given in the Constitution, and the Department of Energy would be asked for a briefing on Gull Island. Well, who is the head of the Department of Energy? A man that was put in his job, not elected, and more than likely some congressman was given a large donation on their election fund in order to put a certain person at the head of the Department of Energy and all of the other bureaucrats in the Department of Energy.
That's the end of the message, the 11th hour message by Lindsay Williams. We continue now with the tape on foreign troops on our soil.
I want to discuss the United Nations troops here in the United States right now. From what I'm understanding, there's about 480,000 to a half a million UN troops spread out throughout the United States. The lady that called into you, and I think day before yesterday, and talked about these 7,000 UN troops in East Lansing, that's the truth. They were there.
How many?
7,000.
Foreign UN troops?
Foreign UN troops.
What are they doing on our soil, man?
Well, Mr. Bush is going to be using them under a national state of emergency after the elections in the fall. And the date that I'm hearing, and I hope the date's incorrect, that he's going to start using them on December 21st. We're going to lose our sovereignty and our Constitution, and that man is going to betray us.
I wonder if the regular military will let him.
Well, from what I'm understanding, there's mass numbers of regular military, Army, Air Force, Marines, who are preparing to rebel against the New World Order if he tries to do it, including the officer corps. From what I understand, there's only two brigades of U.S. military personnel. They're involved out in north of Butte, Montana. There's 28,000 to 30,000 U.N. troops in Butte, Montana alone. That's near Mr. Weaver's residence. Matter of fact, from what I understand, there were 1,500 U.N. troops called up to watch the northern escape routes through Idaho. So he could not escape and no other people could get in. And there are FinFin troops that have all black uniforms that have been used with an organization called Drug Task Force. They're using foreign UN troops in the United States to break in people's doors, enter their homes without warrant, under the excuse of looking for drugs. They did it in my area here in three different houses. They broke into three homes. And my family has seen them walking in the street here in town in black uniforms. And there's a whole lot of black FinFin helicopters and airplanes that are transversing Michigan constantly. A large heavy-duty concentration north of the thumb of Michigan.
Well, what do you think, sir? What do you think Mr. Bush is going to do? Turn the country into an arms camp and make us all echo slaves? Is that the deal?
Well, the people that I've been in contact and they're contact with that are in the military and have been in the military and high levels of the military, and they tell me that they're going to be going house to house to search and seize our weapons, property. They've set up 43-plus detention camps, prison camps, that can house up to 100,000 people apiece. And the MJTF police, which is the other segment of the United Nations troops that are here, there's 300,000 of them. They're going to man the camps, and they're going to be coupled with what's left of our National Guard, our state and county police, and a national police force. And they will probably be focused in the major cities. There's 26 of our largest cities house half of our population. And they will be focused in the cities to go house to house to attempt to confiscate weapons. And that's what I'm hearing, and I'm hearing this from all over the country. It's not just in my area. And I knew a week ago, before that lady was even on your show, that those 7,000 troops were in East Lansing. I knew that before she was even on the air. I didn't know what nationality they were, but I had also been privy to the 7,000 troops prior to her phone call on your show. And I really want that tape of her conversation with you. I need it quite badly. I want to play it back for my friends at work and the people that I'm in contact with so they can hear that it's not just something that somebody is being off the wall about.
We have been getting faxes from different people around the United States showing the maps and the detention centers and the whole bit. And, you know, I don't know anything other than what we hear.
Well, I'll tell you something, Chuck. They're here in mass. And if people think that this is a joke or think that this is just a big scare routine, they better think again, because they are using United States government cars and vehicles. There was a large shipment of tanks going on flatbed cars, rail cars across Ohio with foreign armored personnel carriers on them heading west. There's large troop movements out in the west toward Idaho and Iowa, and they're getting prepared to strike against us internally with the help of our internationalist president, Mr. Bush, at the helm under the FEMA Act, which he will suspend the Constitution for up to 5 years if he gets the opportunity to do so. And the way he's ruining the economy and disrupting our social structure by allowing the international bankers to move our jobs out of the country, destabilizing our industrial base, which is the basis of our money, and how he's allowing the crime rate to go, and he's just completely corrupting the system. And our way of life is being threatened, and our family's future. And I've got two teenagers and three children that are under the age of 10. And if this is not stopped by the people in this country organizing against it, our children's future is gone. And I've been fighting it for about 13 years. And this is no brag, this is the truth, and I'm just mentioning it because you're not alone, you know, in what you're doing. There's a lot of us out there that are doing it. I've spent over $12,000 out of my own pocket, and I don't belong to anything, trying to inform and educate people in the last 13 years. And I've taken a tremendous amount of abuse and threats and the whole 9 yards, just like you. And I know how you feel, I really do, and I'm glad you haven't given up.
Well, you know, I don't have any problem with our predictions, because so far we haven't missed it. The only thing that we were late on, and we didn't miss it, we were just late, and that is that we feel that the stock market is poised for a crash. However, that was delayed because Bush and his pals at the Federal Reserve lowered the interest rate so low that a share of stock was still a good deal.
Well, see, they're deflating the currency so that there's no money in people's pockets, so they have some bank. Some money where they could buy extra food and supplies to survive the tremendous upheaval that Bush and his banking buddies are causing. And deflation is just as destructive as inflation, even more so, because it leaves the consumer, the regular working person, with nothing.
Well, unfortunately, the word less is the watchword of today's American society. Jobless, homeless, hopeless. I mean, it's all less. And I've got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if Walt is correct in any regard, we have a lot to worry about. Walt, thank you for the call.
Thank you, sir.
If you desire it,
discern the signs of the times. What are the times and seasons, brethren? You have no need that I write unto you. Every time I read that statement there, every time I read it, I can see the frustration in the Apostle Paul. Why am I getting these stupid questions? I've told you what's going to happen. I relate it to you time and time again. And then I hear about you falling away. You're wanting to do your own thing. You're wanting to do this. This is happening among you. That's happening among you. Of the times and seasons, brethren, I really should not have to write to you. I shouldn't have to remind you over and over and over and over again. Because you should know perfectly. You should know perfectly. You should know perfectly.
Amen.
The times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should have to preach or talk to you like this. For you